This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This recording was made at Reach 2019, held on March 22 and 23, 2019, in Lancaster, Pennsylvania.
Good afternoon. It's good to see each of you here. Much of what I will talk about today is my experience there in Baltimore, and I'm going to start by asking you a few questions to see what... See what your perceptions are of the city. And again, most of this comes from my experience. If you are actually an urban person yourself, yours might be a little bit different. But in Baltimore City, this tends to be true. So, understanding the culture, fact or fiction. Small businesses are more likely to survive in the city than in the country. If you agree, raise your hand. A few tentative ones. I should really ask you to raise your hand if you don't agree so that you can't be just ambivalent. In my experience, they're actually much more likely to survive in the city. If you ever drove through the city, you might have seen corner stores. And they're not as likely to be. In the country, they're moving towards more big box stores, that kind of thing. But in my community, I have... In our neighborhood, we can walk to the dentist, we can walk to the doctor, we can walk to the grocery store. That's a little bit further away. I have a hardware store that's just around the corner from me. It's packed in an urban environment, but you walk through there and you kind of have to turn sideways. If you really want to find something, you ask the people at the front desk where it is and they can tell you. The majority of the people in the city are on welfare. If you agree with that statement, raise your hand. No, again, not true. There certainly is a larger majority there than in some places, but and there are people on welfare. I'm a fairly high percentage, but not necessarily the majority. Shopping locally is important to urban people. How many of you think that is true? Yeah, I already kind of gave that away, didn't I? The reason that our stores are actually able to survive is because people care about shopping there. When I walk up to Falkenhans, which is a block away from me, the hardware store, they might charge a little more for something, but I'm happy to support them because it keeps me from having to drive 20 minutes to a larger store. So it's people do want to support the local businesses. And actually, in our neighborhood, if you want to start a business, you cannot start a franchise because the other local businesses won't let you. They very much care about local business, and so they actually keep others from moving in. Next question, or statement. Most families in the city are broken, not two-parent families. How many of you think this is true? Okay. Again, here I will say it really depends on where you're at. It really depends on what city you're in. But in my experience, there are many families that are broken. One of the things that shocked us when we moved to Baltimore, we're in a middle class neighborhood, so it's a bit different there. But there are many across the board. There are many families in the city that are broken. But in my neighborhood, the thing that shocked my wife and I when we first moved there is the number of intact families that were there. There are many families that, you know, you have two parents. They've not been divorced. They've been together. And so it was actually kind of a shock to us to see that. People in the city dislike farmers. This is kind of a trick question. How many of you agree with that? Oh, well, I'm glad. So it's actually, if you're talking about, you know, the movers and shakers, the lawmakers, you know, probably there, maybe. But the people who actually live there, the people who I rub shoulders with, they're interested in buying things from the farmers, even if they're traveling an hour away. They want to buy apples from somebody who they can talk to about raising them. They want to buy their chickens, their meat from somebody that they know. Urban people are environmentalists. They're tree huggers. Who agrees with that? Well, I have actually become sometimes refer to myself as a flaming liberal. So, you know, I should probably turn my back that way. Those of you who don't feel comfortable with that can walk out of the room. I have actually become a much more liberal thinker since I've been living alongside of liberal people. So, yes, they are environmentalists. However, this idea of them being tree huggers is not what I've experienced. I've actually had many, many conversations with my neighbors about this. I'll actually come back to this subject later. So just a couple ideas to help you think about, you know, how well do we understand the people around us? This comes from Ralph Winter's, I'm guessing some of you are familiar with the Perspectives on the World Christian Movement. This is a course book that I think D&I goes through. I did this classwork a number of years ago. Ralph Winter's in that, when he is talking about, he's talking about culture and the fact that if we are going overseas, if we're going to a different people group, we're most likely crossing over a couple cultural barriers. And so one of the things that we have to understand is that Mennonites, and there is a broad group of people in here, but we are different than mainstream America. I actually thought about putting up a, I don't know anything or very little, about pop culture. What I knew about pop culture is what happens in the daycare and Christian school that I run. There's you know, the kids, they like Paw Patrol. Actually, Paw Patrol is kind of outdated. I can't even tell you what the most recent ones are, but I find out from them. But other than that, I don't know much about pop culture. But that's part of it. Depends on what you pay attention to. We have sports in Baltimore. We have the Orioles there and the Ravens there. I had to think about a minute for who our football team is. I pay some attention to that, but not a lot. But part of the question is how much do we even understand or fit into mainstream culture? I would suggest that by our very way of life, we're not fitting into mainstream culture. We're trying not to, as Mennonites, right? And so we're already a step apart from mainstream Americans. If you live in suburbia, if you live in a suburban area, you're different than your neighbors. And so if we step into an urban culture, that's yet another environment that, or another cultural barrier that we have to step across. So I often talk to our staff at our school about the fact that, you know, we are in a foreign culture here. This is not the culture that we're familiar with. This is not the culture that we grew up in. And so this is very different. And my what I like for our young people to think about, what I encourage you to think about, is when we move into the city, it's a different sort of environment for us. And it takes some adapting or figuring out what that local culture is. In some ways, we have this... when we think about foreign missions, when we think about going to Grenada, or we think about going to the Ukraine, Romania, wherever it may be, we have this sense of, you know, those they're very different. They have a very different culture. But if we're doing ministry here in America, that should be simple because I'm an American, right? My caution that I give to people is that there is some truth there, but we actually we have to be careful about not just taking our ideas and believing that they'll fit there because the people there are different. It depends how much of an impact we want to leave there. So, during this workshop, I'm going to talk about a number of experiences that have informed my cultural journey, and my goal is to use stories and examples to hopefully make the topic a bit practical for you. But ultimately, our goal of understanding people and adapting to them should be to bring them into the kingdom. And that's really what I want us to hear this morning. So my focus today will be mostly on cultural understanding, getting a grasp on who the people are that we're living alongside, working alongside. And a follow-up topic could be how do we convince people to become Christians. So when you leave today, my goal would be that you have a good sense of as to how you can understand the culture. That would be my goal for you. And the second idea that I want you to leave with is that there are ways that we can adapt our ideas and our culture to fit those around us. That might sound a little bit dangerous, but again, I'll unpack that a bit more later. People in the city have a strong desire for relationship. Just the other day, Sunday, I guess, we went away for the evening and I got a phone call that from one of my neighbors that, I think your dog is out. There's this little. We have a little Shih Tzu. We have this little dog that we're following, and she's. We can't quite get our hands on her. Anyway, we were at church for an evening gathering, and I told my daughter to quick come with me because I knew that we'd probably need two of us to catch her. We drove down there real quickly, and by the time we got there, there was a couple neighbors there around the house. What was really fascinating to me is that there were four of our neighbors, I guess, that that in the next couple minutes were like, "Hey, did you find your dog?" Because she was down at our house, and some of them were a block away. What was amazing to me that is they knew our dog. And that's often true in the city. Like, what's a little bit troubling to me is that when I'm walking the dog, they're probably more likely to say hi to my dog than they are to me. So I'm not sure what to do with that. But people care about that, and they're aware of those things, and it is a way to make those connections with people. But again, my point is that people have a strong desire for relationship. They have a strong desire to know other people. My next door neighbor got really upset. I have a commercial. I have a cargo van, has a ladder rack on it, so it's technically a commercial vehicle, and it's technically not allowed to be parked on my street. I don't have a driveway, so I have to park on the street. I've gotten ticketed, I think, twice, and it's fairly expensive for a commercial vehicle. And she was just, I'm like, you know, okay, so it happens. But my neighbor is just really upset. Like, who called that in? Like, why would somebody, you live here, why would somebody do that to you? Again, people looking out for each other. Our family is actually planning to move in next year, so we're actually planning to move on to another city. That's kind of another story, but our next door neighbor is a realtor, and so he's been aware that we were looking at places in other places, and so we're planning to move out of Baltimore. We had that conversation one day, and then about a week or so later, we were in the backyards, and he says, "Hey, just so you know, I talked to all the neighbors, and they said, you guys can't leave." And I said, "Well, try to stop us, Raymond." And he's actually one of my best friends there. There's also another, since he is a realtor, when we have a family moving into the community, I usually say, "Hey, you need to talk to Raymond. He's a great guy. He'll sell you a house." And he's done this, you know, for a number of our staff members. Then one day he asked me, "So, what are you guys trying to do in Baltimore? Are you trying to, like, take over the community?" I said, "Yeah, kinda." Anyway, so how do we cross those cultural boundaries? So again, the concept here is we as Mennonites are different than the mainstream culture. You may understand some pieces of pop culture, but if we are following Christ, if we are following the path that our people typically follow, then we are not adapting to mainstream culture. And so that's something for us to grapple with. Being in the urban culture is yet another one. I'll come back to some more of that. But in order to relate well to the native urban people, we have several barriers to cross. So one quote that I'll read, this is from Philip Elkins. This is also taken from the Perspectives course. And I'll just read it. "I think it is essential that we participate in a real way in the lifestyle and the struggles of the people we are sent to. When we do not ground our proclamation or our statements, our lives, on an understanding of a people's hurts and felt needs, and when we allow our own cultural understanding of the Christian message to blind us to what God once said in a radically different setting and culture, then we invite failure." So the idea is that we really should think about getting to know the people around us, because otherwise we're not going to do well. "When we do not ground our proclamation on an understanding of the people around us, and when we allow our own cultural understandings, our own way of doing things, if that's the main idea we take with us, then we invite failure." When my family and I first moved, when my family and I moved to Baltimore, my wife and I, we thought, hey, we as Mennonites, we kind of have some things figured out, right? Like, we know how to do family, right? There's some things that we do well. Again, the longer I live there, the more I realize that I still have much to learn from my neighbors. And that's really the attitude that I would, if you're going into a foreign culture, if you're going into an urban culture, that I would encourage you to think about the fact that your neighbors actually have things to teach you. And because I think a lot of times we're like, yeah, we got this. We've got this figured out. We know how to do this. But there's a lot that they can teach us. There are things that we can teach them. but there are things that they can teach us as well. And I think we need to be careful with the us versus them mentality, because I don't think it helps us to befriend them or to become closer, more closely connected to them relationally. So we might come in thinking that we have all the answers to their problems, but it's really only as we understand them that we can help bring change to them. And so this idea of immersion and actually being in the culture. So with the staff that come to work at our school, our goal is to have them live within a mile or a half mile of the school. So again, the realtor was saying, so are you guys taking over the community? Yeah, we basically are. And our goal is to actually kind of be spread out in different pockets in the community on different blocks so that we actually make more connections with people. Engaging with the community and asking questions. We have a backyard that is 25 foot wide and about 150 or so foot long, so not very big. although for our neighborhood, it's one of the biggest backyards that exists in the neighborhood of Hamden. One of the things that we wanted to do is at least have some crops like tomatoes and green beans and things like that, because that's just, you know, as Mennonites, that's what we do. Actually, we wanted some fresh vegetables. So we ended up doing like some raised beds, but two doors down, my neighbor, like, he did an amazing job of growing stuff in pots. Like, we've tried that numerous times, and it just doesn't work for us. And it's the thing of it's more tricky to keep it watered if you don't have a big enough, you know, planter for dirt and so on. And so it's just a different environment. Anyway, so there were a number of times that we asked him, like, he grew all kinds of peppers. I think there was one year he grew 30 different kinds of peppers. And he had this one little one that is a three chili pepper. So you use this one little pepper to make three pots of chili, so you don't want to, like, get it too close to your mouth. But asking questions. Also, his wife, she still keeps up a rose garden. She probably has 60 roses, like rose bushes. We have one out in front of our place. And so just asking her the question, how do you keep your roses looking nice? Making them the expert, making them the people that can give to you. And that takes a bit of shift in attitude. Like, not so we as Mennonites, we know how to garden, right? Yeah. But we can learn from other people. And asking them questions, making ourselves in a sense less than them. And when you put yourself in a place where you're asking them questions and making them the expert, it goes a long way in building a relationship. And we've seen that time and time and time again. Our staff members have seen that as well. And the understanding the culture just takes time. My family and I lived in Baltimore City for 4 years before we started any specific kind of ministry. We now have a school running there, but our goal was to simply invest in the community, get to know the people, get to know what their needs are, what they care about, before we actually started something. And we don't regret having done that, even though it involved more time. So know what your neighbors care about. Understand the politics of your area. I think I actually have a slide about this later. So the politics thing is something that I can – it has a great conversational content. But I'll come back to it later if I have time. But engaging with them on issues that they face. So we did not have a pet when we first moved down to Baltimore. We had children. And what was really, really fascinating – And it's actually comparable, because if you're walking down the street and you have kids, oh, you have kids. And there's actually immediately conversations are. We would go to the local parks. I told you, we had a postage stamp, but we had a small backyard. So one of the cool things is that you can actually go to the park that somebody else maintains. You don't have to, like, mow the yard for 2 hours a day or 2 hours a week. Like, you get to use somebody else. It's one of the benefits. And I have my kids pretty much convinced that actually a big property is not that great. Oh, I forgot where I was going. we didn't have a dog, but we had our children allowed us ways to connect with people, and especially when we actually traveled to the park, that was able to happen. One of the other things that actually really kind of surprised us is that after we moved on to our block, within probably 2 months, we knew about half the people on our block. And so, you know, about 20-some households, we knew the people. When we lived in the town of Ephrata, here in Lancaster County, we had a hard time getting to know our next-door neighbors. But we knew the people right around us, like the four families right around us. And we're like, you know what? I don't know that we can go to the city and do this thing because we don't know how to relate to people. But what happens in the city is that people are interested in relationship. May not be much more than the surface level, but they're interested in that. But you have to be willing to engage with them. And be willing to trust them, giving them a key to your house. So there's two of my neighbors that actually have a key to my house. I don't even know that any of my staff members have a key to my house, but some of our neighbors do, again, because we trust them. Within 2 or 3 months of living there, we would have felt okay with leaving our children with the next-door neighbor. And that's, again, being able to establish a level of trust with those people. So understanding the culture, there's a couple other things that I'm just going to talk about two of these. It really depends on it. The community that I'm in, that we live in, is mostly middle class, so we don't have as much of some of these issues. But if you're working in a poorer community, if you're working with poorer people, you'll likely see more of these issues, especially like broken homes, drug usage. I'm going to talk about two of them, the ability to manipulate and gang affiliation. when we first moved to the Baltimore City, I taught in the public school system there. And one of the things that I soon realized is that these kids actually have an extremely different lifestyle than I had growing up. I actually grew up, for the first 15 years of my life, grew up Old Order Amish. And today I'm now in the city. So I never dreamed I'd be where I am today. That's a whole story in itself. But This idea of being affiliated with gangs, children do that because they want a place to belong. They want a place that they can fit. And so there's actually good reason for them to join the gangs. There's a lot of pressure to join the gangs. And if you don't, it can be dangerous. One of the things that happened in the school that actually really, really shocked me is that about 30% of the children, the kids I taught in high school, about 30% of them brought a weapon with them to school. Why? Because they were interested in hurting somebody? No. They were interested in protecting themselves. Because when they walked out in the neighborhood, it was that dangerous that they had to have a way to protect themselves. Very different cultural reality than even the neighborhood I live in now. I'm in the middle of the city, but it's not like that. But there are some parts of the city where it is like that. That's a reality that some of the people you work with may have. And the reason I know some of this is because of the stories that kids would tell me. Anyway, one story I tell about gang affiliation. There was one student that he was tussling with a female student in the hallway. And they were tussling in the hallway. I'm like, how inappropriate is this? I tried to tell them to stop. I didn't exist according to them, so they just kept on tussling. Anyway, his hat went flying. I'm like, ha-ha! I grabbed his hat, thought I would get his attention. I did. He came running after me, a minute or so later. By that time, I had put it in my filing cabinet, locked it up, so he wasn't going to get it. So I'm like, great, this is an opportunity for to have a conversation with him after school. After school, about 20 minutes after school, I'm still in my classroom. I get a knock on my door. Okay. And the school police officer there is there with the student. And he said, you need to return his hat. Like, sure, I'll return his hat. I just need to have a conversation with him about what he did and what was inappropriate and the fact that he needs to do something different. He said, no, you don't understand. You need to give him his hat. We'll talk later. So I did. And he said, I wasn't really happy because I felt like I lost. But what he told me was that he can't walk out of this building. He can't go back into his neighborhood. He is a gang member. If you take his hat, he actually might not survive getting back through his neighborhood. So again, that's a piece of culture that you have to understand depending on the people that you're working with. And it's being willing to engage in their story. Ability to manipulate. I had two girls. I had a hallway in the middle of my classroom. They were each sitting on a chair. Okay, great. Middle class, they're passing a note. And after it got passed about three times, I was like, no, this is not okay. I didn't bother saying anything. It was sitting on top of the desk. I just walked over there, took it, stuck it in my back pocket, good to go. I'm like,
You can't have that. I'm like, well, I have it. What are you going to do?
At the after class was over, they tried in various ways to convince me to give it to them. After class was over, or sometime later in the day, they came back to me and said, we really want that note. I'm like, why is it so serious? Like, if you don't want me to read it, then don't have it. Anyway, we're there talking for about 30 seconds, and they both start crying. Just like, wow, this really is serious. Like, they're like, this is a note. Like, and I hadn't even read it. I actually told them that I'm going to, and I actually threatened to read it to the class. I realized, though, that I better not read it to the class, because this is something really serious to them. Anyway, they're crying, and, you know, so I eventually just relent. And part of the reason I relented is because I wanted to keep my relationship with them, because I valued that, because I had a fairly good relationship with both of these girls. and I didn't want to lose that. So I ended up giving them the note back to them. And as soon as I did that, the crying stopped. They were done. I'm like, so they knew how to turn on the tears. And again, it's partly understanding the people that you work with and knowing what they're capable of. Sometimes the story that they're telling you may not be true. And it takes a lot of discernment. Again, here's what you do. You take the time and you ask them the questions. Like, if you don't quite understand what the interaction is between two children, like if you're working or two people, later on, if you can ask somebody else, like, what was going on there? If you have the relationship, they'll tell you. Ask questions. Get to know what that means in their culture. I could go on and on about that, but I'll stop because I want to talk about some more things. understanding class differences. What I have found in being in Baltimore is that actually different classes there's almost more a more powerful divide between different classes in society than there is between races. Now, you know, we had riots there in Baltimore a couple years back with Freddie Gray. So race issues are real as well. But what I have found in my experience is that I have African Americans in my community that I relate to very easily. And because we are both middle class. But just some things to be aware of. I actually forgot to bring my book up, but it's on the last slide, it's Ruby Payne. So the lower class, they care about people. It's about relationships. In middle class, which most of us as Mennonites tend to be, we care about things. Money is to be spent. It's to be used. One interesting story that Ruby Payne tells, the school district was concerned about this one family because they didn't have a refrigerator. They didn't have a working refrigerator. And so the teachers went together and they bought them a refrigerator. Great, so solve that problem. About a week or two later, the kids are gone from school like 3 days. And they come back, the teachers ask them, where were you? Oh, we were on a vacation. Weird. Where'd you get the money? What do you think they sold? The refrigerator! Hello? What I found, and this I cannot stress enough, and this is understanding culture. The present is most important. And what I realized with my kids, they don't care about what's going to happen tomorrow. They don't care about the fact that they might have to serve detention after school. They really don't care. What they care about is what matters right now. Now, for me, I'm very well aware, and I'm guessing most of you are very well aware, the choices I make today are going to affect my future. They just do not think that way. So, it's understanding the culture that we work with. And if you work with people in poverty, I would strongly recommend Ruby Payne's book, A Framework for Understanding Poverty, because it gives you a good understanding. She actually gives a comparison of the story of Cinderella and in, you know, the language that we would be used to, and another story in language that the lower class would use. And with them, it's more of a back and forth. So they say, you know, there was this Lady Cinderella, and there was the evil grandmother. Oh, yeah, what did she do? And so there's this back and forth. There's not an uninterrupted story. Like, we're used to telling stories where, you know, where you're listening. But no, there's this back and forth, this engagement, this interaction. It's a different way of life. When I taught in a primarily black school, one of the boys who could not exhale without talking. But what he told me one day is like, he told me like, we're black, we're loud. Okay, and that was the first year that I was teaching it. What I discovered is that, yeah, that's just true. That's just who they are. That's a cultural reality you have to accept. That's who they are. And I love working with African Americans. It was a stretch for me that during my first couple years teaching. Once we understand who the people are, do we try to become like them? So this is the place where I should, you know, be very practical and tell you, well, here's the 6 things you can do. Here's the 7 things you can't do. I'm actually not necessarily going to go there because it really depends on the people that you are working with. How can we become culturally relevant? The only way that you're going to become culturally relevant to those people is if you understand them. And if you are, I don't know what ministry you're involved in, but if you're traveling to the people you're working with, you're doing yourself a huge disservice. I'm a very strong believer, again, this is my opinion, but I'm a very strong believer that you need to live beside the people that you work with. And I have seen again and again and again, the people in our neighborhood who don't even send their children to our school, they're like, oh yeah, the Christian school down there. Our school has a good reputation, partly because they see our people in the community. There's a realization that we're there. So you have to live beside the people that you work with. That's the best way to do ministry. And that's one of the ways of becoming culturally relevant, because then you begin to understand them. How do we go about bridging the cultural gaps? I'm going to come to back to a little bit of this question in just a bit. But one of the answers to that is, these people shall be my people. So that's what we need to decide, that these people are going to be my people. In the 4 years that I work with people in poverty in the public school system, I learned a whole lot. But what I learned is that, you know what? I don't have any easy answers for the amount of difficulties that they're dealing with. And I concluded that the only way... again, I had some good relationships with them, and I think, you know, pointed them in some good directions, but the only way that I was going to have a significant impact on those people was actually to move into their neighborhood, go to their family's birthday party, spend time with them, go to the park with them, invite them over to play with my children. Is that dangerous? Yeah, it is, because it's going to have... My children are growing up in an extremely different environment than I grew up in. I don't know what they're going to... My oldest is 14. I don't know what my children will be like, but they grew up as urban children. I didn't. I grew up on the edge of a farm. These people shall be my people. A couple things from Scripture that I want to talk about. So shall we adapt to our neighbors? Should we conform? the question is, how many of us actually have the ability to resist conforming? Because, you know, how many of you do not have one of these? So there's probably a few, okay? But most of us have smartphones. Is that because it's an idea that we like? I mean, I don't really want to spend much time on that, but this is part of conforming, yes? It's part of the world we live in. We conform all the time. We change who we are based on what happens around us. We conform all the time. Scripture says, be not conformed to this world, but be transformed. But I think there are places, like a smartphone. Again, there's many, many negatives there. There's things you can access there that shouldn't be that easy for us to access. But we some of those things are not, don't necessarily in themselves become doctrinal or scriptural issues. 1 John 2, love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the pride of life is not of the Father, but it is of the world. Be not conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your minds. But the other thing I would like to couple with that, Jesus said in a number of times during his ministry, so he said, we're hearing here, don't love the world, but he talks about loving people. Love your neighbor as yourself. Jesus said that many times. Love your neighbor as yourself. So that's part of what we are called to do. So we're called to be somehow in the world, to be different from it. But we are called to love the people around us. And I think that means engaging with them in life and enjoying life with them. And in some ways, having to make house payments, having to decide on, you know, what you pay, what bills you pay, and what bills you don't pay, having to be irritated that the city comes out and puts a ticket on your on my vehicle, whatever it is, you're being engaging in the same kind of things that they engage in. Paul. Actually, no. There's one other reference on it that I was studying recently. John 4, verse 7, where Jesus is talking to the Samaritan woman. John 4, verse 7. When a Samaritan woman came to draw water, Jesus said to her, "Will you give me drink?" His disciples had gone to the town to buy food. The Samaritan woman said to him, "You're a Jew, and I'm a Samaritan woman. How can you ask me for a drink?" So now this says a lot about culture. She's telling Jesus, why are you asking me? And because Jews don't associate with Samaritans, so it's just not part of what they do. It's just not the other group that I've wondered about. So Jesus spent lots of time with publicans and sinners. Who are they in our society today? It's a question I'm asking myself and I'm thinking about. But who are they today? and how well would we interact with them? But Jesus goes to this woman. He asks her to draw the water out of the well. And he's asking to drink from whatever she has to drink with. And so this is crossing a cultural barrier that she's even kind of weirded out by. But he's willing to do that. He's willing to cross that cultural barrier. And he wants us to go to those who have a different culture. And their conversation goes on. Jesus, so that's Jesus' first answer. And then he invites her to draw from something more, draw from a well that won't run dry. And she keeps trying to figure out, well, what are you talking about? Because she's still back at the practical thing. We shouldn't even be here talking. That's where she's at. But Jesus reaches out to her. He's not put off by the fact that she's in a different culture. But he's crossing several cultural boundaries in order to relate to her. They spoke the same language. They were fairly close geographically. And Jesus would have likely gone through here often as he went from Galilee to Jerusalem. But this is, again, going back to Ralph Winters, who is in the Perspectives book. Her very first reply focused on the significant difference between Jews and Samaritans. They worshipped at different places. Jesus didn't deny that difference, but he accepted it, and he bypassed it. He focused on something else with her. He focused on relationship. Paul said, "To the weak I have become weak, to win the weak. I have become all things to all people, so that by all means I might save some." So can we conform to our neighbor's wishes? Do we know what our neighbor's wishes are? If we ask them, they'll likely tell us. So being willing to ask them, again, being willing to engage with them. Local shopping, I mean, you know, as plain people, we're really concerned about saving money, right, being thrifty. And I think that's a good thing. But I actually had a co-teacher who was not at all minute. He actually did a far better job. He would go to Staples when they had free stuff for teachers, and he'd just go and get the free stuff and leave again. And he'd go to the next Staples and get all their free stuff and leave again. I was like, wow, he's even better than Mennonites are. But are we willing to do local shopping if the local community cares about that? Walmart is kind of a bad word in our community. It's not one you use. Actually, when I go to the local hardware store and they don't have something, I'm like, oh, you mean I have to go to that store we can't talk about? be willing to consider their views. So I guess I'll talk about this just a little bit. So for politics, I live in a liberal community. And so what was really, really fascinating to me is when I go to Mennonite circles, I hear people talking about, oh, well, you know, Clinton's bad, Obama, you know, there's some issues there. And what's really, really fascinating is I'd be having these conversations on a Sunday afternoon with some of my family, and then I'd be in the classroom the next morning, and my students were saying, like even if I use the word Republican, they're like, what did you just say? Anybody Republican was like the devil. And so what was really fascinating to me is that I heard the same rhetoric in my classroom as I heard in conversations on Sunday afternoon. So we as people, I think, become too quickly entwined in some of these political discussions. But be willing to consider their views. I've actually had many, many good conversations with my neighbors. And one of the things that I tell them is, you know what? Part of the we don't vote, but part of the reason that my wife and I run a school and that we're interested in this is how we actually change the world. It's not about voting in the best politician. There's actually a better way to change the world, and it's about getting out there and making a difference in people's hearts. One of the things that are practically that our school does not use, or 90% of what we use is disposable, but it's not foam. And we do that because out of respect for those in our community who care about that. It's just a very small practical thing that we do conform. We actually encourage parents to use reusable diapers. When we first started out with children, you know, you had the really hard ones that you had the two layers, and they just didn't work really well. You had to be very careful. You didn't jig your kid with the safety pin. But they have actually really cool ones out there now. What was really fascinating to me is that it's kind of a rage, and like parents would talk about what the coolest kinds of diapers are that you could get. Anybody familiar with that discussion? Yeah, some of you are good. But at our school, at our daycare, we actually make it easy for parents to use reusable diapers because that's part of what our community cares about. We also, one of the things we emphasize at our school is that we do service learning. Our goal is to get out in the community, get the students to focus on people out in the community. Can we learn from our neighbors? My answer is absolutely yes, but our attitude is the key. So I'm not giving you many practical elements, but what I'm saying is that you need to take time to know your people and engage with them. And I think we need to be careful not to judge the people that we're living alongside, because I think we do that too quickly. These people shall be my people. Be willing to learn from them, have a reciprocal relationship, and show them Jesus in the midst of your lifestyle. So these are the three things that I would encourage you to look at. Ruby Payne, again, if you're working with people in poverty, this is huge. The corner is actually, not from a Christian perspective, it tells the story of inner city, what it's like in the drug world and with gangs. And it kind of tells a story about a family or two, and then it tells about why that happens. It talks about some of the cultural realities behind that, the psychology. So that ends my what I have to share. I probably have a minute or two for questions. Not very long. Yes.
So you talked about our culture, Haitian culture, and then urban culture. How about if within that urban culture we have many, many different cultures?
You do.
How do you deal with that?
Well, again, even I live in a middle-class community. Where I taught for a while was in a poorer community, so a very different community. Even in Baltimore City, there's many different pockets. So, but for the most part, our goal was to reach our local neighborhood, and that's why we have our staff living within that neighborhood. So how do you deal with that? You choose who you want to work with. And you focus on them, and you figure out how to work with them. That would be. Does that help? Does that kind of answer your question?
Well, so in our neighborhood, we live in the city. We have about 20 different cultures just right outside of our
door. Right. Right. So how do you work with it?
We're trying to figure it out.
Yeah.
Yeah,
it is hard because even in our neighborhood, it's mostly white, but we have a segment of Chinese people, we have Iraqis there, we have a number of different people. So it's really, in a ministry setting, if you're doing ministry, you do want to ask yourself the question, who can we reach the best? But all people are important in God's eyes. Any other questions? Yes.
So you mentioned in passing about like the danger, and that's a huge concern for a lot of people coming to our view. So what is the direction
for the right kids as far as I Yeah, I wouldn't trade living in the city with my family. There are different realities, but one of the things that's actually Halloween is one example. So we actually, again, you might throw bricks at me later. We actually sit outside and give out Halloween candy on Halloween. The reason we do that is it's an opportunity for us to connect with our neighbors. Our children don't dress up, and we tell them, you know, so they ask, well, they've got this stuff over here. You know, why are they decorating for Halloween? So where do you want to talk about that? And they also, the other thing that we caution them on is sometimes they, if we're not doing that, then it's easy to make fun of it. But our encouragement is no. So they do that, but we don't need to walk down the street, you know, laughing at it, making fun of it. It is different raising a family there, but I think it's very possible. And wouldn't trade it. It actually, I think, is a, you have a clearer sense of what's right and what's wrong in that kind of setting than my oldest daughter is about the age of going, she's going to be going to high school next year. And, you know, depending on what kind of high school she would be going to, I'd be a bit concerned. But there, in the setting that we're in, again, what is right and what is wrong is fairly clear. Even in some of our, I hesitate to say this, but even some of our bigger Mennonite schools here in Lancaster County, I think it's a bit more unclear, like, what is good and what is not good. And I'm at 0 minutes, so I better stop. Thank you for being here.
This recording and many others are available from Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. For more information, call 1-814-789-4769 or visit us online at www.christianlearning.org.